Welcome to Sessions by Monster Chats. Sessions is a new kind of show for us where we ditch the script and instead dig into the real stories behind the people in our professional lives. How do we all come together in this world of entrepreneurship, sales, and unified communications? One session at a time. On today's episode, I'm going to be talking with Edwin Delgado. Edwin and I are going to be talking about customer engagement, creating urgency, sales and operation, process implementation, and adding value to others. I'm Colin Mitchell, the host of Monster Chats and the founder of Monster VoIP. Edwin went from working at Fortune 500 companies like JP Morgan Chase to working with small mom and pops and everything in between. As a trainer and sales leader, he hosted monthly 40-person intensive sales academic teaching sales fundamentals and advanced selling techniques, having old students reach out to him and simply say how the classes changed their lives is still one of the most rewarding highlights of Edwin's professional career. Edwin, welcome to Monster Chats. How are you?
I'm doing great. Thanks for having me, Colin.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, before we hopped on here, obviously you're telling me you're a new father, so congrats on that.
Thank you very much. It's greatest gift of my life.
Oh, yeah, absolutely. I have three myself, and my wife wants a fourth one. So
Wow. I know. You're going to have to start another business.
Yeah. Well, I guess maybe she figures every time that we start a business, we can just have another kid. So I have a part of four companies now, so I guess maybe she figures we can have one more kid. But
wow.
Yeah, I don't know. We'll see how that works out. But anyway, let's jump in and just, you know, let's start from the beginning. Tell us your story. Like, where did you grow up and when did you first decide you wanted to be an entrepreneur?
I remember wanting to be an entrepreneur my entire life. Maybe it was a little bit of wanting to rebel and hating authority. That's probably part of the motivation. But it was also anybody I knew in my life that had what perceived me as a young child to have everything that they wanted, whether that was financially, the big house, the freedom, they seemed to be entrepreneurs. So that was always what I wanted to do. But I also knew that there was going to be steps to it. And what was difficult is growing up in a household where but like many people, I think, where I had a father who was very regimented. He worked for the same company, Kraft General Foods, for 35 years. Mm-hmm. And he did have side hustles and did well purchasing real estate and things like that. But his idea of success was, I need to go to college. I need to come out of college and get a job. I need to get stock options with dividends and, you know, stay in that path of ascension in a large company. So, you know, he tried to ingrain that in me. And I think that just the inner monologue just never listened to it. Didn't want it. That was not for me. And I did it right. I tried to walk that path and, you know, like you said, I started off working at JP Morgan Chase and did international stuff and, international banking and proprietary positioning stuff. And my finance was what I thought was going to be a great baseline for me to start at and a good foundation for me to be able to take in whatever venture that I went to. But I kind of always figured, and probably anybody who's known me most of my life always knew that I was going to end up in sales in some capacity. Mm-hmm. Just because of my personality and willingness to put myself out there and help other people kind of open up.
Interesting. Okay. So, you knew early on that the corporate 9-to-5 thing wasn't for you, but you gave it a shot anyway. And you said something interesting. So you said that, you know, people probably early on thought that you would get into sales. But do you have some experiences as a young kid where you just knew you had a knack for sales or something you were passionate about?
Yeah. So, I went to school in Connecticut, at Fairfield University. And, I used to take the money that my dad would give me for food and most of that got reallocated to beverages, as most college students would do. But I actually would take that money and go down to New York and go to Jamaica Ave, and I'd buy Jordans and buy stuff, and then I was selling Jordans. And sometimes it was knockoff Jordans, but I would sell Jordans out of my car to rich kids at college.
Interesting. Yeah, yeah. So so you found out how to hustle early on.
Yeah, I mean, the margins weren't huge, but at the very least there was some money to be had there, and I was able to parlay that into partying and things like that.
So it was all about just getting more money for beverages at that time.
Yeah, pretty much. Yeah.
Interesting. I was selling things early on as a kid myself. When I was in middle school, I used to sell little, people would put these really cool things on the air valves for their bicycle tires. We call them chromies, but you could get
chromies,
yeah. You could get eight balls or skull and crossbones. I'd go to the store and work a deal and then sell them for more. And it was, for me, it was to get shoes, because I grew up pretty poor. So I just wanted to get shoes to play sports. And so I had to get creative early on, like yourself. But
see, if our paths would have crossed, I would have sold you some Jordans.
we could have just exchanged chromies for shoes.
my first ever sales job was just a 3-month stint with a company called Vector Marketing selling Cutco knives. Do you remember Cutco?
I think I've seen as seen on TV or infomercials about Cutco knives, right?
I mean, it was kind of the cheesiest sales pitch possible. You would cut a penny with the scissors, and you would cut leather with the knives. And that was my first ever sales job. And I remember it was right before I left for college. And I only did it for 3 months. But I made like $17,000 in 3 months. And for, you know, an 18-year-old about to go to college, that was good money. Yeah, it was good money. So, yeah.
Awesome. All right. So you found that you had a passion for sales early on. All right. So let's fast forward a little bit, right? So you do the 9-to-5 thing. How long before you're like, oh, I can't take this. I got to get out of here and do something else.
You know, it took me a while to kind of be willing and ready to take the risk. I think that a lot of times, even if you're in a job where you're not very happy, the world is filled with people settling for a reason. And I think that there's a false sense of security. People think that as long as I'm getting that paycheck every 2 weeks, I'm going to be okay and I'm going to figure things out. Mm. Finally, you get to the point where you realize, like, what am I doing all this for? I'm wasting time. The years are going by. And so at some point you kind of have to put your foot down and say, all right, I need to do something. And so that really set the stage for me to kind of like say, okay, I tried this, and I could look at my father in the face and say, hey, look, I tried to do this and it wasn't for me. And I think also, you know, you being married and having a family, timing is an important thing, right? Mm. And partnership is an important thing. So if you're going to embark in an entrepreneurial venture, who the team is that you have around you, how you construct that team, how things are delegated, the roles and responsibilities is important. And then the most important, I think, is if you are in a relationship, your partnership at home. Because if I'm going to embark on that journey of being an entrepreneur, it's not just me that's on that journey. You're bringing your partner along with you, and there needs to be buy-in there too, because you're both taking a risk there.
Oh, and there's
sacrifices being made on both sides.
Yeah. I think that you said a lot of really important things, right? So the first thing you said is, you know, the hardest part was like making that first step, that jump, right? Taking that risk, which I think is the hardest part for most entrepreneurs, is just getting started or taking that risk. But if once you do decide to take that risk, you said a lot of things that were, I feel, really important. One is your partner, you know, needs to also understand, you know, what they're signing up for and what that looks like, and have buy-in and be on the same page. And then the team, like, what does the team look like, and, you know, really setting it up for success. I mean, I think a lot of people tend to do this, you know, the term side hustle has become really popular, right? So they're kind of like dipping their toe in the water of like whether they want to be an entrepreneur or not. So once you finally did take that risk, and it sounds like you and your partner were maybe on the same page, what did that look like?
So for me, it was taking a lot of the skills that I had developed over the years. So particularly in the training world, I was doing a lot of sales and operations training. And I was noticing, hey, look, there's a lot of contractors out there that need help. They're not very keen on technology. They're not really into innovation. They're typically incumbent type businesses that are either inherited and they continue to do things the way that they were, or they started the business and decided to keep the business that, you know, the same way, which we're seeing now with COVID and things like that. If you're a contractor that has only one, maybe two lead generating channels, and now those are not COVID friendly channels, and those leads are drying up, they don't know what else to do. And so I noticed that if I was able to kind of hone in my training and sales background, and be able to help people innovate by creating a process that was easy to follow, then I'd be able to maximize, you know, how many people that I could help, because I'm only one person. So it had to be very regimented and process oriented. So it was scalable, and it was also adaptable regardless of what part of the country I was in.
Mm. Interesting. Okay. So how many clients have you been able to work with since you started?
I say on and off in the last 3 or 4 years, I've probably worked with close to 2,000 contractors. Wow. As far as salespeople though, because like I would hold sales training seminars back in the solar days. We would do solar academies. I mean, the number of salespeople at the ground level would probably be, you know, over 3,000 or 4,000.
Yeah. And what are some of the challenges as working in these specific industries?
I mean, technology is a big one, right? So if you have a business and you're expecting to be efficient and be able to reach more customers, if you reach more customers, then you need to be able to quote faster. If you're going to quote faster, then you need to be able to manage your supply chain a lot more effectively. Once you have the supplies there and on time, then you need to be able to manage your crews and expand those crews. And then there's accountability measures there, right? So I think technology kind of touches all aspects of the business from the front end lead gen, from the sales and the closing, and then as well as the operations on the back end. So technology is definitely a big one. And the reason why technology is such a challenge is because you're typically dealing with people who don't want to adopt technology. They're reluctant to do it. So that's the real challenge. The other challenge is, let's be honest, good salespeople are hard to find. Mm. That's a huge challenge, to be able to keep people motivated, to keep them hungry, because I could do an amazing job of training somebody and then they go out and they set a record, you know, a record month. And then they come out the second month and they set another record. Now the third month starts to get a little more difficult because they just got two fat paychecks or maybe four fat paychecks. How do you keep that eye of the tiger lit? You know, you got to keep that fire lit in them. And it gets challenging once they start seeing their bank account increasing.
All right. So let's talk about the first challenge. So first challenge of getting these individuals to buy into the need for technology. How do you overcome that?
So I learned a tough lesson. You don't always overcome it. I'd like to think I could convert everybody, but that's just not the case, right? There are people who I have spent hours and hours building them an incredible technology, a great platform for them to manage their business and all aspects of their business in one place, as opposed to before when they were using five different systems.
Or none.
And they wouldn't and they wouldn't use it. They wouldn't use it. And what I realize is, instead of me spending all this time building this entire platform, just focusing on one little aspect of their business and seeing how often they use it. Seeing how often that they use it, that would tell me a lot. If they immediately jumped on that and engaged in that one aspect of the business, then I could, you know, push them to expand that, and adoption would happen a lot easier. If I built something that they prioritize, not what I'm prioritizing for their business, but what they prioritize for their business. And if I built something and they weren't using it, or all they did was complain about it, then I knew that this was not going to be a partnership that I really wanted to pursue long term. So I'll take my consulting fee, do what was asked of me on the, you know, on the initial scope of work, and then say good luck and be on my way. Because you know, with consulting, we want to make a positive impact on every single client, you know, whether it's big or small. I'm very much driven by impact, but our idea of impact doesn't always align with the client as far as what they believe they need.
Right. And now the second challenge, which is, I'm sure anybody in sales has this challenge, is keeping the salespeople motivated consistently. So do you have any tricks up your sleeve for that?
The best advice I could give for leaders out there is this term mutual accountability gets thrown out every once in a while. I hear a lot about accountability, but I think sales leadership in particular have a skewed thought of what accountability means. So let me give you some examples. The wrong way to lead would be through fear, anxiety, putting negative pressure on people, leading through what the lens of selfishness. So, you know, even money, right? If I'm a sales leader and I'm really motivated by money, then how am I conveying that message to my people? Is it that, you know, we're going to make a lot of money together, right? Like, we're going to make a lot of money together. I think the money carrot gets dangled a lot in, mm-hmm. in sales, but the money shouldn't be used as a ransom.
And not everybody's motivated by the same things.
Not everybody's motivated by money. So if you have a leader who's very motivated by money, and you have a salesperson who's motivated by, let's say, just adding value to clients and making people happy, right? That doesn't make them a terrible salesperson. In fact, I prefer salespeople who are looking to identify client needs and deliver on that, right? The money will come. I think leaders who focus on growth and development of their people, if you're able to do that, then that's going to really spur confidence in your people. And confident salespeople are great salespeople. Mm-hmm. The other thing is that if you're creating an environment in which they feel like they're being positively challenged, and there's growth happening, and whether it's growth in ascension as far as promotional opportunities, or just growth, you know, in your skill set, growth in your income, if you're providing growth, then I think that translates to security in a lot of ways, which in sales, sometimes, let's be honest, security is not really a term that's associated with sales. You know, usually people are saying, you know, this is a grind, right? It's a grind. We used to call it the solar coaster. It used to go up and down, right? You'd be when you're feeling good, you could sell anything. And then when things started downturning, then you start sulking, and then salespeople become very emotional. So then we have to turn into psychologists as sales leaders. I think if you can create that environment where people feel like they are growing, and have very much a team mindset. You know, I used to say we, not me, right? If we have that team mindset, then I think money just becomes a byproduct of your happiness and your hard work, and your work becomes more meaningful.
Mm. I totally agree with that. We're going to take a quick break just to tell you what we do here at Monster VoIP. We started Monster VoIP because, frankly, we were sick and tired of getting gouged on our business phone bills and getting dropped calls all the time. Today, we serve over 6,000 customers. We're passionate about saving businesses money and giving them the features they need in a modern tech stack. For today's companies, you can text info to 424-378-6966 to learn more. I'm speaking with Edwin, and we're really digging into talking about how to keep salespeople motivated, and there's a lot of great nuggets in there. Before we wrap it up here, what are some things you want to leave people with? How can they find out more about you and connect with you online?
So I'm on LinkedIn, how, you know, you and I connected. My website, I'm not sure when you're posting this, but the website is ChooseLinear, LINEAR.com. It is down right now because we're in the midst of revamping it to accommodate the masks and COVID test kits and gloves. So depending on when you do post this, the website should be up in the next probably 2 weeks. So we're excited about that. I'm on everywhere, social media, at Eddie Del Solar. Is my handle on Instagram and things like that. But yeah, I'm around. I'm always available. And, you know, people who have known me for a long time, they refer me to salespeople who I've never even trained, never even knew, because I'm always quick to, you know, give them a 5-10 minute pep talk and in some cases talk them off the ledge. Because sales can be very, very stressful, and sometimes it takes an outside voice or reason to kind of engage somebody and get them to think about what's really important.
Yeah, awesome. Thanks so much for coming on here today. Really appreciate it. Welcome to the Monster Chats community. If you're listening to the podcast, please subscribe, share with your friends. We're listening for your feedback. The show is all about you. Thank you for tuning in to another episode of Sessions by Monster Chats, presented to you by Monster VoIP. Monster VoIP started, frankly, because we were sick and tired of getting gouged on our business phone bill and getting dropped calls all of the time. Today, Monster VoIP serves over 6,000 customers and is passionate about saving businesses money and giving them the features that they need in a modern tech stack for today's companies. Text trial to 424-378-6966 to get your free trial of Monster VoIP.